Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Feel that. I feel it. It's the excitement. It's the anticipation. It's fall. We're rocking. It's video game season. And wherever you are, whenever you are, however you happen to be listening, we are so grateful that you chose to tune in to DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsors this week, Linda and Harry's. They made that possible, bringing the show to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff 2N1T Kanata, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who just made it to intermediate warfighter, but who someday hopes to be advanced, Christian Spicer.
Hello. Usually you
hello!
Say
hello.
Usually you ask a question. You're like, how are you? I was waiting with bated breath.
How are you? Are you excited about the advancing your war fighting?
Your warfare? I've been playing since 9 p.m. last night. I am
I was
day negative one on the West Coast. So yeah, wow. I'm excited. We'll get to that. And if people want to know or see, we mentioned it last week. If you want to see my Halloween costume, we were Guardians, and it's at my Twitter profile pic, twitter.com/Spicer.
Were you Guardians of the neighborhood?
We were Guardians of 10 minutes until Estelle no longer wanted to wear her Rocket Raccoon costume.
Oh, man. DLC, of course, is your downloadable Christian. It's your downloadable Kanata. But this week, we're excited because DLC stands for Diute Live from the Convention. Because we got our man on the street in Melbourne here to report on the weekend's, last weekend's, second annual PAX Australia, Mr. Raj Diute. Hey, Raj.
How are we? I was excited to hear exactly what you were going to come up with for DLC. I'm pretty sure that's why most people come on the show.
I hope so. I hope that's our big draw. I fear not. But Raj, you were at PAX Australia. You were participating in PAX Australia. You were reporting on it. You were there to soak it all up. I was there last year, and I'm very jealous that you got to be there this year because I really wanted to return. It was so much fun last year, but everything I've heard is it's bigger, it's better, it's more amazing this year.
Yeah, it was triple the fun. It was, for starters, you weren't there, so everyone was a little more relaxed and happy about it. Yeah. No, that's not the case. It was a change of venue. It was a change in schedule date, moved to out of the middle of winter, which was really nice, and a great new venue at the convention center right in the heart of the city that just housed everything under one big giant roof with no tents and no walkways out where the rain was pouring all over you. So, yeah, it was a really, really good effort. And to be honest, I think the likes of PAX Prime and those guys are going to be really jealous of the venue we've got now.
That's cool. And it's also moved to a warmer time of the year. I remember last year we were dealing with a lot of rain.
It is Melbourne, Australia, which means that it rains and snows and it's hot. It goes from, 40 degrees to 100 degrees, talking Fahrenheit in a day. But that's just part of Melbourne. So it did rain on the middle day, but it was hot on the first day. And then it was just nice and warm on the Sunday. So
very cool. Well, we got
a lot to talk about this week. We got you talking all about PAX Australia. We've got Sunset Overdrive to talk about. We've got Call of Duty Advanced Warfare to talk about. We've got an awesome special guest for Tabletop Time telling us all about the Essen Spiel, which is this massive board game convention that just happened in Germany. Tons to get to. We got the chat room buzzing. We got people on the telephone line. It's going to be a great show, but let's start it off the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, of course, the part of the show where we try to convince one another of the most important stories that are happening in the world of gaming. Raj, as our guest, I'm going to give you first pick. What do you think is the most important story this week?
Besides PAX Australia being extended to 2019 and the government signing onto that one, which is really nice to hear, and the convention center playing home for the next couple of years.
A Marvel-esque plan of out into 2019. We've got forecasting.
all credited to Robert Koo, I believe, at Penny Arcade and the guys that organized the Australian one. But no, really good effort there that we're all very excited about. But the big thing for me, and this is sort of out of the blue because I'd never seen it before, was Star Citizen and the FPS mode that they debuted here at PAX Australia.
And you were in the room for that, right? You saw the big presentation. This kind of a surprise. Star Citizen is the biggest crowdfunded anything ever. They've raised well over $50 million and continue to push that number up. And it was, you know, Chris Roberts' spiritual successor to the Wing Commander series. This is a spacefaring, in a cockpit, dogfighting, trading, privateer-esque kind of experience. And all of a sudden, surprise, surprise, you land on a planet, get out of the cockpit, and now we're in a multiplayer first-person shooter shooting aliens.
That's right. Yeah, they hired out one of Melbourne's oldest music venues, a place called the Forum Theatre. Beautiful old building right in the heart of the city. Not actually part of the convention officially, I guess. It was a separate event that was just held on the weekend. And then ran into that one at 9:30 at night or 9 o'clock at night. And they were streaming it out to their supporters across the globe. Chris Roberts up on stage in his Wing Commander uniform, sort of slash Halloween, slash just likes to wear it, I think, thing, and announcing this new FPS module, or showing it off a little bit of that live multiplayer match from the developers from Illphonics, I think it was, from memory, who had developing the module on behalf of Robert Space Industries. And seeing this guy talk about it, it reminded me of being back at E3 and seeing Sean Murray from Hello Games up on stage talking about No Man's Sky. He's just a kid with $60 million nearly behind him right now in a giant candy store building exactly what he wanted to build 20 years ago with Wing Commander. It's really impressive.
So what was the feeling like in the room? Is this these are the, you know, he's preaching to the choir. These are the most excited supporters, I'm guessing, of Star Citizen. These are people who contributed money to make a dogfighting space sim, which still is. Was this pure excitement when they saw that the game was more than that, or are people worried about it getting away from its core game mechanic?
I don't think so. If there was any haters in the room, they weren't heard, that's for sure. It was an electric
haters gonna
atmosphere.
hate. What?
I feel like Subway now all of a sudden. It was incredible. Everyone was seriously cheering. They knew about the FPS module coming online. It wasn't something out of the blue. And it was always a part of the larger picture, I guess. So But they announced a couple of ships and showed them off that are in the hangar portion of the game, which is available now if you're a supporter. So you can wander around and walk in and out of these ships that are sitting around in your hangar. And then they went into the FPS module after showing off a few things like the systems that are involved in the modeling of the person that you play, things like condensation coming up on the helmet as you sprint. Because you're actually running out of breath, the eye modeling, being independent of the head. So just like a normal human, when you look down and you hit your chin on your chest, your eyes actually continue to roll. So all of that stuff being modeled in-game, real-time, looking amazing. Like, this thing makes me want to go buy a PC. I haven't been a PC gamer for about 10, 15 years. So I will seriously consider going out and building my own PC for this now.
I didn't realize that the first-person shooter mode was already announced. I thought that was much more of a surprise. It certainly was the first time we'd ever seen it in action. Christian, did you get a chance to see this footage? They released a video of the presentation.
Yeah, it's one, I don't think anyone that supported this game could necessarily be too upset. It goes back to what we talked about last week, right? Like, is this taking away from the main mode of the game and from... or what people expected the game to be. And from what I've seen, it doesn't look like it has. But also, shots fired, right? Here's the wing commander guy, whatever you want to say, past Library of Games, making what looks like it could be the best first-person shooter also. Like, holy crap, this is incredible, right? I mean, my jaw literally hit the ground. It's crazy.
It literally hit the ground?
I was sitting very close to the ground. I was laying on the ground, you know, like at a sleepover, like a very girly sleepover. And I was on my computer and I was tabbing over. I was reading some Babysitter's Club. And then I saw that video and my jaw literally.
Well, I have one question for you. Why wasn't I invited to the sleepover?
Oh, who's to say that you weren't and you just didn't show up like the football game?
Oh,
shots fired indeed. So what is it about it that made it look so much, you know, above and beyond other first-person shooters? I saw a pretty standard, although pretty, very pretty, but I saw a pretty standard functionality as far as FPSs go.
Well, I think its prettiness is part of it, though, right? Because I liked Killzone. I liked all the Killzones, the PS4, Killzone, Shadowfall, whatever. I liked it, but part of it was beautiful. And you like beautiful games. I think it's a big part of it. And here's this game that's looked beautiful, but I don't know. It was incredible to me just because it seemed very realized and very competent for a game that also has so much more. You know what I mean? Oftentimes it's like, a game will shoehorn in a driving section of an otherwise good first-person shooter. But here's the best space shooting exploration game, potentially. You know, people are hyped for this. Also now has Call of Duty in it. I think that's incredible.
No, I agree with you. I think that the thing, you know, we've always said for years is, why can't you have the first-person shooter game that when you get into a car, now it's as good as Burnout, and then when you get out of the car, it's as good as Call of Duty, and then when you get in a boat, it's as good as, you know, there aren't any great boat games, I guess. But, you know, the idea that why do these specialized games, why can't you bring them together into one experience? And I think that the exciting thing for me seeing the video is showing a game that is going to feel much more like a big giant world that I get to play in rather than just a flight simulator, just a space simulator. This is really a universe that I'm invested in, and I'm going to build up all my stuff and I'm going to get my better spaceship and then I'm going to land and I'm going to go do other things. And I think that's, as somebody who's into science fiction, that's what I wanted out of Mass Effect, for example, and, you know, and it gave you flavors of that, but this feels much more robust when it comes to all those different systems.
It's definitely built that way. And the other thing for you, Jeff, especially, is it's not a permadeath, but there is much more of a ramification around dying. And, you know, it's not a Call of Duty run in all guns blazing type of shoot at everything. There are consequences for you dying or being shot down. And if you aren't recovered by teammates and things like that, that can lead to a larger ramification. So it's built around this world of like you said, of literally taking you away to another place. And that the systems at the moment running separately, the flight sim and the FPS, the architecture is there for them to all seamlessly integrate. So it should be a crazy experience.
The chat room is giving me lots of great boat games: Hydro Thunder, Wave Race. So none of them came to mind. The only game that came to mind was Blood Wake, the original Xbox game, and I wasn't going to drop Blood Wake into the conversation. But Hydro Thunder and Wave Race are both excellent. Awesome. That huge news. Christian, do you agree? Is that your story of the week? You got something else on your mind?
I mean, I think that is a very big story. I mean, it's kind of, last week was so news packed. This week, I think, is a little slower as big games are coming. And I guess the thing that I kind of think is interesting and I'd like to get your guys' opinion on, and I bought into it and took part in it, but Call of Duty Advanced Warfare is out today. It launched in the U.S. at midnight Eastern in Best Buy and GameStop and digitally as well. It was midnight Eastern across the U.S. So here on the West Coast, we got it at 9 p.m. And then it's out all day today, Monday, as a, quote, day zero edition, and then officially launches tomorrow. I mean, we've seen this with movies, certainly, where it's like, you know, the movie comes out Friday, but it's like first showings come to the special wink, wink sneak preview Wednesday at 4 p.m., 7 p.m., 10 p.m., midnight, Thursday at 10 a.m., 11. And it's like, you mean the movie comes out Wednesday? But this is the first, you know, huge AAA release to do something like this on this scale. And do you guys think it's a good thing, bad thing? Like, Jeff, do you think, does it matter at all? Or is it just marketing to get people excited for a game that otherwise maybe wouldn't have the hype behind it?
Well, actually, I think it happened 1 week before, too, because I got a phone call from my friendly neighborhood GameStop saying, hey, we've got an authorization to sell Sunset Overdrive to you at 9 p.m. if you want to come by. So take that for what it's worth. But I don't think there's anything bad about this or wrong with it. I don't know what the downside would be, other than, you know, all these companies have boxes of these discs just sitting there waiting for an arbitrary time to click by so they can start selling them to you. You know, I haven't gone to a midnight release of a video game since probably Halo 2. It's been a while, but because, you know, I don't need to stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning with bleary eyes to try to experience the first couple of hours of a game. It's still going to be there when I wake up in the next morning. But you know, people that are hardcore and want to do that, 9 o'clock is a much better time than midnight as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, I'm all for it. What do you think, Raj?
Well, I guess, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I really saw about it was a lot of people buying it digitally, especially on Xbox, that were having a really hard time with the download being so slow. So a lot of guys down under, I don't know about the rest of the world, but my Twitter feed sort of had people that were going, you know, sort of screaming, oh, it's another 4 hours, it's another 6 hours, it's getting close to midnight, it's still not done, I just want to play, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know if that was the strain of the servers or our pathetic Pacific internet connection to the country. But it is a fairly large game, I believe. There was something I read maybe yesterday about the PC version coming on 6 DVDs if you buy it boxed.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. I don't know. Yeah, why not put it on a Blu-ray? I guess enough people don't have Blu-rays. But there were certainly events here. It was sort of, for me anyway, I mean, I do play a lot of I played a lot of Black Ops 2. But I've switched to Titanfall and haven't really gone back, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, maybe the larger issue is, what are release dates? Will more games do this? Does it really matter anymore? People are in the chat, and I think it is. You know, originally it was Tuesdays because other media had claimed other days. Other, you know, physical media had claimed other days, and movies came out one day, CDs came out another day, whatever, video game to Tuesdays, and now more and more, does that even matter? Or will you have, and some games do, Nintendo games often come out different days. You know, is it just, this is our day, and it comes out, and it could be a Wednesday, Thursday, or whatever. I kind of like the traditional, like, ooh, Tuesdays, this is when games come out kind of feeling, but I realize that that's maybe just nostalgia for me, and people today kind of don't care. It's like, I don't know, get the game on a Friday, then I can play it all weekend. But I don't know, I think it's interesting.
It is interesting, and I think it's just a way to get more buzz. You know, it's like, oh, you want to be the first to play. You want to be the first to play, and these giant franchises have that kind of anticipation wrapped around them. So why not, you know, give people a way to feed that anticipation with being the first to play? But I think we probably will be seeing it more. A lot of people in the chat are saying, well, or not a lot, but one person in the chat is saying we wish it was, on Friday or a Saturday. That way, you know, you could stay up all night and play without having to worry about work or school. But, you know, the people who sell your games have to work as well. So,
well, when I was playing some online. I got it on Xbox One, and I think we might have talked about this before, but I don't think people necessarily realize that if unless you change it, your Kinect is always hooked up. You know, it's your mic still. I don't think this guy knew, but it sounded like this guy was playing in an apartment or a dorm or I don't know somewhere, and he's talking the whole thing not to anyone in game, and then someone yells, "Yo, how long are you gonna be playing that?" And he replied with expletives that I will leave out. And he was like, "You ain't getting this TV anytime soon. I took a week off work. I got 10 sick days. You best believe I took them all. It's Call of Duty, baby." And then the whole apartment, I just heard laughs, screaming in from this guy's mic. So you were, it's an event.
You were clearly playing online with Mark from marketing. His speech was well received. My story of the week is a pretty awesome thing, in my opinion. This Internet Arcade was released this week, which is a in-browser free way to play over 900 classic arcade games. This is spectacular to me. I can't believe that this is A, possible, and B, legal, and C, nobody has shut it down, because It's wonderful that you can. I did it this morning. I was playing a whole bunch of Joust and I was playing some Outrun, and it works in your browser. And you can hook up a gamepad and play on a gamepad. Is it as awesome as, you know, your own MAME cabinet in your house? No, but it's free and it's in your browser and you can do it anytime. And it's 900 arcade games, and that's amazing, I think. So tell me why that's wrong, guys, because that's I think that's a pretty epic story this week. No?
Did they actually rebuild them? I was just clicking through then, and they were talking to one of the developers saying how easy it was to build arcade games online. So are they actual like ports, or are they the
proper game? I'm sure. I think it's the like ROMs. I think it's using the ROMs, but then figuring out a way for your browser to interpret the ROMs. You know, it's emulating the ROMs on your browser, which is you know, what we've been doing with ROMs for, you know, 10 years now, is emulating them on PCs. But the you know, the ability to do that in a browser where you don't even have to download the ROM anymore, you just log on and click on a game and start it right up, and put in a virtual coin, and there you go. It speaks to how far we've gotten with, you know, processing power, and how easy it is. You know, nothing has to be downloaded anymore. It's all just this web-based, cloud-based system, and you have an access to history here. This is my childhood. This is all the games that I could ever have wanted. 900 plus games just sitting there waiting to be played. That's pretty epic.
Very cool.
It's really cool. I love the tech. I love that we're getting this. It just, to me, I will never play this, because those games, like, I don't get a lot of those old arcade collections either, because I just feel like those games are built to take quarters, and as frustrating as that is, playing it in a way that has no stakes, it's kind of like, I'm trying to think, like playing poker with friends with not real money. It can still be fun because you're hanging out with your friends, but it's totally different because you're like, all in, who cares? Even if you only have $20 on the line, you're like, I'm going to slow down this hand. And I think these arcade games, kind of like when you just have unlimited continues or not real money, it's weird. I'm almost saying, like, I think what Microsoft tried to do with their game room was an interesting way to present arcade games for a modern time. It's like Turtles Arcade, if you play that now. It's still cool or whatever, but it's totally different, right? And that's where I feel like a lot of these old arcade games kind of fail today. But I'd much rather have this browser thing exist than not exist, don't get me wrong, but it's not something that I'll ever use.
ETH Demon in the chat says it's not new. He saw browser ROM emulation several years ago. Yeah, I know that, you know, emulating ROMs in a browser is not new, but to have them all in one place like this, have it so easily accessible, and have it's like this giant library where you can just go and play everything. That's pretty great. So I just wanted to highlight that. We got several stories submitted by users, which you can always do for our consideration for Story of the Week by using our hashtag on Twitter. That's hash DLCSOTW for Story of the Week, or using our subreddit. People are digging on the subreddit over at reddit.com/r/5x5DLC. A lot of good discussion happening there. There's a weekly discussion thread of each show that we do, And a lot of good stories submitted, including this one about YouTube now supporting 60 frames per second in 720p and 1080p. This was submitted by Space Bob on the subreddit. And if you check it out, if you've seen it yet, YouTube's 60 frames per second mode, boy, it's pretty. And it's a great way to show off these games. I was watching a Mario Kart video in 1080p at 60 frames per second. Does it look like I'm watching a fully rendered version on my console, on my television? No. Is it very pretty and noticeably better quality than watching a regular YouTube video? Heck yes. So I think this is a big improvement for watching video game videos specifically on YouTube.
Yeah, it's great. I don't know. I'd much rather have it than not have it, but I feel like most of the time I'm watching YouTube, I'm on my phone or in between something else or on my computer, and I know some people are very serious about their YouTube. Again, love it that exists. Will it change the world for me personally in any way? No.
All right.
Right?
Yeah. No. I'm kind of the same. I mean, it is amazing. I watched that same Mario Kart and it looks fantastic. It's beautiful. It's what you'd expect from 60 frames per second. But then I was around at a friend's place last night and we literally were watching cat compilations for 30 minutes with the lowest resolution videos you could possibly see that were filmed off of a Nokia phone 10 years ago or something ridiculous, and having just as good as time. So I think if you're into the gaming streaming stuff and it's important to you, then that's exciting for you. But for the 95% of people that are on YouTube, they don't really care if someone is in 60 frames per second getting kicked in the nuts.
All right. From the guy who wants all the peas and gets all upset about all the peas that he's missing, I feel like this is...
It's different to be playing than it is to be watching. I'm not big. Personally, I don't watch a lot of video game content online. For people that do and want to use this to see how good a game looks or whatever, it's great. Like I said, it's awesome. I'd much rather have this exist than not exist. I'm just saying, for me, it's not the biggest deal in the world.
All right, fair enough.
And if it's the biggest deal in the world for you, you're an idiot, and you should change your life, and you should... No, I'm just kidding.
I just think it's great for gaming content. I feel like it's a way for them to be the preferred way of looking at video game content. You know, people are going to Twitch for that, which is a different thing entirely. And I understand that, but still,
it's a step closer to them being Twitch, though, isn't it? They've got to do is turn on that streaming ability, and well, here comes some competition. So yeah, that's probably more likely where it's headed to.
And I'll say this, anything that continues to... I love the internet. I love what it does. And the United States, and I think Australia is kind of not the best also. but anything that forces, I like it when companies keep innovating and let's pack that bandwidth and let's make people realize that we need to have better solutions for high-speed internet that, a utility, whatever you want to call it, but yes, use it. Don't hold back because the infrastructure can't handle it yet. Let's push the thing as far as it can and then let everything else catch up. So that, in that aspect, I think it's great.
Well, speaking of watching videos online, I have to thank our sponsor, who is a fantastic service for watching videos online. And it's a better way to learn something than YouTube. A lot of people turn to YouTube to learn something, but you find yourself trying to find the one video that talks about the thing and it isn't a moron who doesn't know what he's talking about, and maybe it's the last version of a piece of software and you're trying to find out, well, does this still work? Well, that doesn't look like the screen that I'm looking at. How come this video is showing a screen that I'm not looking at? And I just want to figure out how to do this one thing, and why can't I find the stupid YouTube video? Enter Lynda. Lynda.com is the easy, affordable way to help people learn. You can instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on business, software, web development, graphic design, and more. And Lynda.com works with industry experts, so you're guaranteed to get the most up-to-date information from people that know what they're talking about. They talk to the software companies making the software, so that you're definitely talking about the latest version, the latest updates. Often, they'll get that new video up the same day the release hits the market. You're always up to date. And their courses are always high quality, not like those stupid homemade videos on YouTube. And every course is broken into bite-sized pieces so you can learn at your own pace and learn from start to finish, or just find a quick answer to a quick question that you quickly want resolved. Lynda.com has great tools like searchable transcripts, playlists, and certificates of course completion that you can publish on your LinkedIn profile, which is great if you're a professional in the field. And whether you're a beginner or advanced, Lynda.com has courses for all experience levels, and they make it easy to learn anywhere with apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android. And for one low monthly price of $25, you get unlimited access to over 100,000 video tutorials. Premium members with an annual plan can download courses to their iPhone, iPads, or Androids and watch them offline. And you can also download project files and practice along with the instructor. Lynda.com is a great way to learn a new skill, practice something you already know, or figure out an answer to a problem in a piece of software or just a business application. It's really great. I've used it myself, Lynda.com. Guess what? We're going to give you 7 days free just for being a DLC listener. If you go to Lynda.com, that's L-Y-N-D-A, LYNDA.com/DLC, and then use the promo code DLC. That's all you have to do. You get 7 days free. Go to lynda.com/DLC and try it. Give it a shot. It'll show them that you listen to our show, and it'll encourage them to keep supporting us, which we appreciate. Okay, guys, another story submitted on the subreddit, this one from DatSim1015. This is a sad one for me because I was at the E3, what, 2011, I guess it was, maybe earlier, when Bethesda showed Prey 2. And I was wowed by what they showed. This is the kind of game I wanted. It was this cool, free-running, bounty-getting, Blade Runner-esque universe that didn't look anything like Prey 1, to be honest, but it looked like something I really wanted to get my hands on. Unfortunately, this week, official confirmation that Prey 2 is canceled. End of story, end of line, canceled. Now, they did say, or at least Pete Hines, the vice president of Bethesda, said that they are interested in perhaps using the Prey license at some point, but what we saw of Prey 2 is completely in the can, and Human Head Studios, who was working on it, is no longer working on it. So this bums me out. Did you guys ever get a chance to see that Prey 2 footage?
I've seen the cinematic roll about 100 times since this was announced on Monday or Sunday for you guys, but Pete Hines did the keynote or the opening story time for Penny Arcade in Australia this year, so wasn't really any mention of Prey 2 not coming to fruition during that I understand. But
yeah,
when he spoke to CNET and they asked about Prey 2, like you said, it was a little bit off the track from the original storyline, but it did look amazing. Like, it looked like something that I wanted to get my hands on, but I guess 3 years is about the time that we need to wait for the Last Guardian. That's about 3 years now until they officially announce it's gone.
Right. Oh gosh. I hope that's not the case. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a lesson in showing things too early. It's a lesson in not knowing what your game is going to be when you unveil it to the press and to the public. That's kind of a problem. If your game isn't fun, if your game isn't something that is going to end up coming to fruition at all, maybe it's not time to show it yet. But you know,
well, it's just life is like Dark Souls, and these people spent 3 years making a game, and they went down the wrong hallway, and they weren't geared up to take on the demon that they encountered, and you know, they lost all their souls in the game. They need to go to a campfire to get everything. I mean, Wombat or Stuart Nocht, however you know him, he says often, nothing exists until it comes out. And I think it's an unfortunate reminder, but that happens more and more in games and other media because things do get announced so early, right? To get the hype train started, and you got to show it at E3 because that's kind of the big time, and you get, you know, companies, stores that are going to be buying it and carrying it, and you got to plant your flag now. Like, Uncharted 4 is coming out this date. And, you know, it happens in movies too, certainly with what Marvel did, like releasing movies until I'm 48, apparently. Like, I'm so excited to see this movie when I retire. But until you buy that game, it doesn't exist. It's not out.
Unreleased games are Schrodinger's cat, according to Christian Spicer.
That's an elegant way of putting my long rambling statement. Yes.
All right, well, we got a lots to talk about of games that actually do exist because they have come out. So let's go right now to the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Boy, there's a lot of big games to talk about. We got to talk about all the stuff that you had your hands on at PAX as well, Raj. But I want to start with the big game that came out last week. Sunset Overdrive, because all three of us have played that. Raj, what is your take on Sunset Overdrive? How much have you played of it?
I've played a few hours. I guess we didn't get it the same day as you in America. It didn't come out until Thursday, which is our normal release day in Australia. So picked it up Thursday night, had PAX all weekend, so I've sort of plugged it in where I possibly can. But I'm really enjoying it. I played it at E3. So I had some time there with it as well, and it's just a fun game. Like I'm enjoying the, I guess, tongue in cheek, breaking the third wall sort of interaction with the characters, and the game mechanic itself seems really tight. It's really easy to get around the world, grinding on buildings and rails and swinging around. Putting together combos, bouncing off of pretty much anything that's on the ground is a launch pad. And then the weapons that they put together, the teddy bear TNT launcher and the record sort of dispenser that you start with to begin the game. I'm really having a good time, and I think they've done a great job bringing this first-party title out on Xbox.
I just wanted to – I think you said – breaking the third wall. I think it's breaking the fourth wall, but I love the idea of breaking the third wall would be like turning to your left and talking directly to the – anyway, no, I didn't mean to correct you there. But Christian, what's your take on Sunset Overdrive so far?
I understand why it got such high reviews. I have not finished the game. I'm maybe 5-6 hours in. I understand why it got the stellar reviews that it did. I personally, based on the time I have played the game, would not review it that highly. I'd maybe say it's an 8, very high 7 for me personally so far. Like, it's big, it's beautiful. The world is full of these, you know, zombies. The characters are cool, and it's the movement, I think, works when it works, but maybe I'm not as good as Raj is. I feel like I'm frustrated at times that I can't climb a building the way you can in Infamous or Assassin's Creed, and like you're kind of required to bounce, and you get the air dash later that helps. That certainly helped me move around. But I find it's almost like because the world is so full, like in Infamous, the levels aren't as full, right, of obstacles and things to run on. It's kind of like, oh, this is the line I'm going to take to kill these guys. And same with Bioshock Infinite. It's like, I'm going to get on these two rails, I'm going to go around and kill these guys. I find that the world, it's great that it's cool and full or whatever, but I think the camera isn't awesome for trying to keep track. I've not been able to do what I wanted to do. And I think this game maybe rewards not precision, which is taking me time to adjust to, because it's kind of like, just shoot stuff, blow stuff, run around, jump, who cares where you are, just shoot, shoot, shoot. But I'm like, no, I have a line. I want to do this. I want to, and I feel like it misses in that regard. And the humor, I know that I make potty jokes too. The humor for me is largely missing. I don't like the fact that it's like, oh man, fetch quests are so dumb. They're the dumbest thing ever. Now you got to do one. Wink, wink, wink. No.
Not just one. Every quest is a fetch quest.
Yeah. And this game for me is the type of open world game that I don't necessarily enjoy. It's very similar to Dead Rising 3, where it's like you meet a new character, then you gotta go get 5 things for that character, and then this character did that, and all the while the game is telling you how stupid this is.
Yeah,
but you're still making me do it. That's a miss. You hit very minor spoiler, I won't say how you encounter it, but you hit an invisible wall that's labeled invisible wall, and they're like and I'm like, don't do it. It's either dumb, then don't do it, or it's not dumb and make this world. Like another open worldy game is Shadow of Mordor, and there's invisible walls in that, but they build a big mountain there. The quests aren't all the same. Yes, you're going to quest givers, but things feel fluid and dynamic. And I feel like this game has so much good to offer. I think it's worth playing, but it's not. And I'm having fun. I'm going to keep playing it, but it's not dragging me back to it the way other games have. And I find the self-referential, like, this is so stupid. I'm like, it is. It's stupid. Quit making me do it. Jeff, am I the odd man out here, or are you...
Mark this down in the history of this show, because I agree with you 100%. I want to like this game so much more than I do, and I really want to like this game. It's just making it so difficult to like it. A lot of people in the chat are talking about how, oh, it's Jet Grind Radio with guns. It really isn't. It's the game you referenced, Dead Rising. If somebody had told me this was Dead Rising 4, I would believe them. It feels like Dead Rising. It feels like Dead Rising meets Tony Hawk. And I wish it controlled more like Tony Hawk. I wish the feeling of traversal was more like those games that are about traversal. Or it was more like, as you said, Infamous or Crackdown. This game actually just makes me really want a new Crackdown, because, as you said, the world is so vibrant and so colorful and so interesting, and the graphics are really beautiful and they pop. And all that stuff is a wonderful place to be in, but I don't find myself enjoying getting around as I should. I should love getting around in this game. I love getting around in Infamous. I love getting around in Crackdown. And in Tony Hawk, it's not about getting around. It's about being awesome on the things that happen to be around. It's not getting from place to place. It's using the place to my advantage. And this game wants you to play it that way. It wants you to use the environment to your advantage. But you can't, because you're constantly being bombarded by bad guys and wanting to deal with bad guys in a way that is effective and has... makes use of all these cool guns and things that the game gives you as well. So I find myself, and maybe this is something that'll go away when I get 10 or 12 or 15 hours in instead of being 6 or 8 hours in. I find that I just do the thing that I did in Bioshock Infinite, which is I get myself on a rail that goes in a circle or a square, and I just grind that circular motion and kill as many enemies as I can. Because that's where I fight the camera the least. That's where I am least at a disadvantage. The humor, as you said, is very Dead Rising. It's very – I think this game – part of why I am afraid that you and I may not enjoy the humor is I feel like this game is trying so hard to be a millennial. It's trying so hard to be ironic and sarcastic and above it all, and that it's like your dad putting on an ironic t-shirt, you know, you see right through it, you know, it's like, it's not authentically millennial, but it wants to be millennial, or maybe millennials do dig it. I don't know. I'm not one. So I don't know, but
Dark Matter Dragon has in the chat, he said, you know, it'd be cool if you had it labeled an invisible wall and then let you blow through it. And I think that's how you would do something like that, right? If there's like, bam, invisible wall, and then your character's like, but wait, I have an invisibility cloak, or, you know, whatever. Or, man, fetch quests sure are stupid. Now go get this thing for me. And you roll your eyes when your character rolls their eyes. And then you go on this quest, and all of a sudden it becomes something totally different. Like, that's how you have fun with the genres. Don't, you know, say how bad they are, then have you do exactly them. And the game does have some good variety in side missions. Like, if you didn't like Infamous Second Son because you thought there weren't enough things to do, like, this game is chock full of things to do. And, you know, they're different. They're not all defense. They're not all whatever. Some are traversal or whatever. It's bright and it's beautiful and it's so different looking than so many games that are out there. And I like you, Jeff, I really want to love it, but it keeps, you know, slapping my hand every time I go reach out to pet it, and just does something. It grates, it just not the right way.
No pun intended. Yeah, it grinds on you, is what you're saying. Go ahead, Raj.
I agree. Like, the humor is a little bit It's not right. I mean, Dark Matter Dragon Against, a millennial game programmed by dads. And that's 100% accurate. Like, the humor isn't highbrow by any stretch of the imagination. I just, it seems fun to me. And I think Christian hit the nail on the head earlier on when he was saying that it's not precise. You have to give up the thought of playing it precisely. Because as soon as you try and sort of like the iron sight or zoom or anything like that, you're almost breaking the mechanic they've built into the game, because they want you to bounce around, they want you to traverse, and traversing sucks when you hit some water or something like that. It's really not good. But there's so many things around that you're just meant to sort of just jump and happen to land on something and then bounce off that and then combo into something else and build up this meter, and then you can make something else explode or shoot a barrel and that explodes. I think I'm very much caught up in the graphical next step of this game, the cartoon level that this has taken it to, and that for me has been a really nice thing to experience. And once I've given up that thought of I need to control everything and I can just run around, I don't really care about my health meter. If I die, it doesn't really have any real ramification. So it's just about bouncing and exploring and enjoying the world and taking in that visual aspect for me. And that's the part that I'm really enjoying.
Yeah.
And I think you said it really well. I think that is the way to, if you're able to do that, to quote Estelle's favorite movie, if you're able to let it go and go with that, I do think that that's how the game opens up and becomes fun. Like, I'm not saying it's necessarily the game's fault as much as it is my unwillingness to enjoy that style. I do think that if that's what they were going for, I almost wish they didn't put in aimed, you know, technically it slows down time a little bit, but a left trigger, you know, zoom in a little bit to iron sight or whatever. And I also wish they didn't nerf running. Like, it looks like your guy is running, but when you're not grinding or bouncing, you go so slow.
Well, they're
like, when you're running on the ground, they're trying to get you to bounce and grind and whatever.
They're trying to disincentivize being on the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think they should just open everything up and you're bouncing, running, jumping, bouncing, running. You're doing everything awesome and fast and whatever. And instead it's like, if I miss what I'm trying to do, it's like, I feel like I'm in molasses. But again, this is on me. These are my personal opinions. If all of this sounds awesome to you, you will love this game.
Well,
and
I think that one of the things that these type of games need to fix and need to figure out, for me, this game really brought into stark contrast, is how to communicate the objective in an open world that I need to get to, that I need to traverse to, better than we've gotten so far. Having a tiny little yellow X in the environment somewhere as I'm doing all these cool, awesome things isn't cutting it. I hate the fact that I'm grinding and doing cool things and bouncing and just constantly swiveling the camera around trying to find that little X marker with the little distance and seeing if that distance is going up or down. I don't want to play that way. There's got to be a better way to do it. Maybe have a beam shooting up into the sky that I can see from a far away, so I don't have to just be looking for this stupid little icon that's placed in the world. And God help you if you do a side mission that has multiple icons, because if you do one of those, and then it's one of those where you arrive in the general vicinity and then you have to find something. So the icon goes away when you're close to it, but the five other ones that you aren't close to are still up in the environment. And it's just this cacophony of distances that you can't even parse because you don't know how close you are to the thing you're looking for. It's just completely borked. And I think we got to figure that out, because that's – flat out bad in this game as far as I'm concerned.
How great would it be, and again, I'm no developer, but how great would it be if somehow it was procedural? Like, once you're bouncing around having all this fun, and then once you get into a part of the world that's open enough or whatever, it drops the thing that you're supposed to defend, or, you know what I mean? It creates the thing that you're supposed to do. So you can just be moving, exploring, whatever, and then these events happen. That's emergent gameplay that, like, oh, now I'm in this thing. I would love if a game like this that has this movement and traversal could somehow implement a system like that. And I should say, I am pointing out all the negatives. The weapon design, awesome. The fun with the variety of weapons, super cool. I have LOL'd a few times. The humor isn't completely missed. Character creation, sweet. I love it. I love creating my own guy. Graphics, beautiful. I know it's 30 frames per second, whatever, not full 1080p, but it looks great. It's fun. It's cool.
You're super right about the character customization. That is done really, really well. And it is fun when you unlock new costume pieces to try on. It's got a really wonderful sense of style. You're absolutely right about that. I find the weapons to be pretty fun, but honestly, not any better than a Dead Rising game. You know, but I think that we've kind of gotten to the point of these kinds of things. Insomniac has done it so many times that at this point, like, they're not going to give me a gun that's any more interesting than a thousand other games that I've played.
You're not surprised, like, the first time you played Ratchet, and right. You were like, wait, this is a gun? But that said, it's Insomniac doing Insomniac really well. Yeah. It's not Fuse.
No, I agree with you. And I think it needs to be underscored that the reason we're so critical is because you see potential here, and the game it has really great points about it, and it does seem like a really interesting concept. And I really also want to say that it's not it's not quote unquote humor that I'm upset about with this game, or poorly executed humor even. It's the attitude. It's the attitude of the game, and the humor is all derived from that attitude. I love humor in games, and even bad humor sometimes is fine with me. It's the attitude of that, like, that ironic, I don't care, but I'm awesome. I haven't accomplished anything, but I'm awesome. Everything is dumb, as you kept saying, Christian. Everything is dumb, and everything is I'm over it all, and but I'm awesome. It's this weird, ironic, very like faux millennial take on everything that I find so, so grating. Anyway, but not you're to take old, away, yeah, Raj, Jeff, I'm sorry. All. Go ahead. What?
you're just old now. That's all it is, really.
Maybe.
You're just proving how your age is, I guess.
That is a fair point, man. I could be completely off base, and there could be a bunch of kids who are like, this is exactly how I feel, YouTube, wee! You know, it could be awesome, but maybe I'm just not digging that kind of feeling anymore.
Maybe if we had someone under 30 that could give an opinion, that'd be good as well.
I'm sorry, Raj. I don't know who you think you're talking to, but Jeff and I both live in Hollywood, and we're both 21.
All right. Is there anything else you wanted to say, Raj? We kind of ganged up on you, I think, but I do think there's a lot of people enjoying this game. I just am not one of them.
That's all right. That's all right. Just bully the poor Australian. That's okay. Like I said, I'm enjoying it, but I've been very jet lagged and very sleep deprived. So giving up control has been pretty easy for me in terms of mechanics. So I don't know if that's contributed to it or not, but I'm enjoying it so far. And I'm probably about 5 hours in as well. So I'll check in again when I'm at 10 or 15 and see if I'm sick of it.
Tell me about some of the games you played at PAX. What were some of the standouts that PAX Australia was displaying for you?
Sure. PAX for me was more about the indie side. I wish Jeff Mattis was here to, sorry guys, I wish he was here to sort of riff off, but like a lot of the big name games we had, the new Halo Master Chief Collection and Assassin's Creed Unity, Far Cry 4, a lot of that stuff is coming out relatively soon anyway. So I spent a lot of the time in the Australia New Zealand Indie Pavilion. And there was some really exciting stuff in there. A couple of, I suppose, highlights for me. It was a great little word puzzler game by a couple of brothers called Bonza, which is iOS, Android sort of, and Kindle Fire, I believe. A game that's been out for a while now, and it's essentially they take a crossword, a completed crossword that has an overarching theme to it, like the seven deadly sins or something like that, and essentially break it up. And your job as the player is to put the crossword back together, matching the filled in components to complete the puzzle. And each of the packs or levels has 10 or 15 of them. They're constantly adding new level packs and themes to it. And then they have celebrity packs as well. So the guy that runs the New York Times crossword, for example, comes in, creates 10 or 15 levels and puts them in there as sort of add-ons that you can purchase as you go through and complete them. But when I was talking to them, the whole goal of them creating the game was basically to create a game that the girlfriends would want to play. because they were sick of them saying, "Oh, you're always on the iPad, or you're always playing a game, and you know, why aren't you hanging out with us?" It's like, well, now you can hang out too. So it was really good fun. It was really quick and easy to pick up. I think it's been out for about 6 months, so it's not exactly brand new, but the demo and the interface for it's really simple, really easy to use, and a great sort of like time killer. If you're looking for a mobile game on your smartphone or
what's the name again?
iPad. Bonza. Bonza.
Zed. I love that. That's how you know you're Australian. Is the Zed. Awesome.
Z.
No, I love it. I love it. Chris, go ahead. Do you have another one, Raj?
Yeah. The other one I'll talk about briefly. I mean, there were so many. They had 60 games there, so a really big showcase. There's an issue of Grabbit issue 8 on the iTunes App Store, which is free, and it does a really great rundown of every indie game that was available. So if you are interested in indie games and you want to see what was there, that would be my recommendation to get. But the other one I'll talk about briefly is one called Sortie, which is a physics-based game built on the Unity engine by a New Zealand team called Frog Shark. It's a bunch of guys, I think it was about five of them, and it's sort of like a cartoony 3D, very simple graphic sort of to it, but you're in an arena and you run to pick up some weapons or a shield, and it's all top-down. And you essentially use one thumbstick to spin or move your character's arms, whilst the left thumbstick is to run around the arena. And it's just about a matter of picking up these weapons and using this physics engine that they've created to defeat your opponents. It's just really good, fun arena-based brawler. There's no real huge mechanic to it, and the guys have admitted themselves that it's a long way off, but. If you can get your hands on a demo of that, it's definitely worth a go.
Very cool. Well, we still have Call of Duty to talk about. We got your phone calls. We're going to talk about lots of other stuff. But I have to thank our second sponsor, Harry's. Harry's, we love it when Harry's sponsors. And this is the perfect time for them to sponsor because it's Movember. What's Movember? Movember is when you grow your face out. Get that facial hair a-growing. Are you growing an epic handlebar mustache? Some sort of cool stash to frame your face? Well, guess what? Harry's is the official razor partner of Movember, and they're going to be there for you the entire Harry month. Whether or not you grow your hair this Movember, Harry's can get you an amazing shave and do good by supporting Movember's quest to fund research on important men's health issues. Now, what is Harry's? Harry's is your best way to get an easy, cool, effective, stylish shave without having to leave your house. It was started by two guys who wanted to figure out a way to not have to go into the store and have them unlock the cabinet and grab you razors, and it's all pain in the butt. But Harry's.com delivers a shave right to your door. So they bought this blade factory in Germany, and they crafted some of the world's highest quality blades, and they cut out the middleman, and that's why they can offer blades and shaving gear to you much cheaper. Their starter shave starts at just $15, and that includes a razor, three blades, and your choice of Harry's shave cream or their new foaming shave gel. I have been checking out their product. This is a true story, a little bit maybe revealing to the audience, but My new wife told me that I need to get on the facial product tip. I need to moisturize. She wants me to moisturize. I don't moisturize, but guess what? I mansturize. Just made that up right now. Didn't even plan that out. I do it a cool way because I realized that Harry's had been sending me all these cool, manly, cool smelling facial products along with their shaving kits. So they just released their shave moisturizer. They sent me one. Now I'm on that. I use it. It's very cool. And shipping is totally free. And if you use our promo code, we'll give you $5 off. So go to harrys.com. That's Harrys.com. and put in the promo code DLC. That'll give you $5 off your order. You can get your Movember on, or you can just shave it up as you normally do. I highly recommend this service. I use it myself. So check them out. Harrys.com. Don't forget the promo code DLC.
You did the speed read for your own pitch. I love it.
See, I laughed twice at that pitch, so maybe that's why I enjoyed Sunset Overdrive.
Yeah, that was so, it was very millennial of me. Christian, you are Call of Duty-ing it up. Tell me your yeah. first impressions, biggest game release of the holiday season, no doubt. What do you think?
Well, these are my day zero impressions, so they can change. These are my double XP day multiplayer. I'm horrible at Call of Duty multiplayer. I'm a competent first-person shooter player, but as opposed to my friend who I was playing, my air quote friend, my teammate that I was playing with earlier, I am not taking the week off to play the game, which is why it's things like that, people's dedication like that is why I will never be a top-tier Call of Duty player. I just won't be. That said, I also had not played a Call of Duty game since maybe Black Ops 2. I played for a little bit. This is the first Call of Duty I have bought in a while. So I'm not... I don't know the nuances of the differences, and I'm not your authority on Call of Duty. As a dude who loves games and whose taste in games listeners know and appreciate, I am really enjoying Advanced Warfare. The campaign is straightforward. It's not doing anything new, but it's not convoluted and confusing, and it's not trying to be this unless there's some weird twist and super left turn later. But it's fun, and it the actions, the set pieces are there and grand, and the explosions happen when you think they should happen. For someone that didn't love Titanfall, I find that the movement in your little mech suit or whatever it's called, exosuit, is cool, and it feels like Call of Duty, but the movement is fresh and fun in a way that I think is a little more, and I know obviously Titanfall is made by X Infinity Ward people and that have that Call of Duty, you know, in their blood. But I find that this game, I enjoy the movement in this game better, the on-foot movement in the single player and in the multiplayer. There's also a classic mode you can play without any exo upgrades if that's your thing. Yeah, so far the story has been what you'd expect, a big summer blockbuster type stupid thing, but it's fun. It's I haven't had any of these annoying that some of them have had before. I think World at War was the worst for me, where it's like, I'm playing on normal, so I'm not playing super hard. But that's how I played all the game. But there haven't been any of these kill loops yet where I feel like I'm like, oh, now I'm in, I've memorized the thing, so I got to take out this guy from this door, this guy from this door, this guy from this, get up, then just push through. I think the game still does have, you know, those spawn points and stuff like that, but it hasn't been frustrating in the way that some of the past Call of Duties were for me. The multiplayer has been, the matches I've played, really fun. Haven't had any connectivity issues. It's silky smooth. It feels right. I enjoy the exosuits in it. It has 13 spots for kind of how you outfit your guy versus 10 that was in Black Ops 2, I believe. But yeah, it's really fun. Like, I'm not saying it reinvents the wheel, but I think Sledgehammer Games did a really, really good job on making a really fun Call of Duty. I know it's cross-gen, and I know it kind of fluctuates its P's on Xbox One, but it looks great when it's supposed to look great, if that makes sense. Like, there's a scene that's, well, it has some, don't get me wrong, it has some really eye-rolly press X to do something moments. Some really horrible press X to do whatever moments in the single player. If you've seen my tweets, I've been tweeting about it. I won't mention it here because it's a very minor story spoiler. But when you're playing and you're in the levels and you're shooting stuff, it looks great. When it's a cinematic story moment and you see dudes in suits sitting in chairs, they look so stupid. Like, it does not look great then. And like, the cars look stupid. But when it matters, it looks great. The smoke, the particle effects, 60 frames per second, stuff's going on everywhere. It looks great. And I think it's a step up from the people that were disappointed in Ghosts. And if you're a fan and you're looking just to shoot stuff, I think it's a really, really easy to recommend this game. Have you touched it at all? Are you interested? Are either of you interested in it at all? Have I made you interested in it at all?
Nope.
Slightly. I was not over the moon for what I'd seen in terms of presentations at shows or online prior to its release, and I was a big Call of Duty guy. Like I put a lot of hours into Black Ops. I skipped Ghosts because I, like I said before, Titanfall really scratched that itch for me. So I'm half tempted, but I have a problem of getting stuck in like the multiplayer and just leaving hours. And I don't really want that to happen at the moment because I've got a bit of a backlog of other titles that I want to get through. So I will probably pick it up, but it won't be in the next week or two. I'll probably just wait until it probably, you know, everyone's got they've maxed out a couple of times and I can be the absolutely worst player in multiplayer. But yeah, I will pick it up. I'm not excited for it though. I don't know. Maybe I've just hit that wall with Call of Duty now. That's just, it just seems like more of the same.
The wall of duty.
I think there will definitely be Black Friday deals on this if you're in the US, and I'm horrible with names and I apologize to our listeners, and this might have been in other Call of Duties. I said I'm not the guy that goes to nuances, but there's a multiplayer mode in this game that interests me because when you go into it, it's populated some by bots, some by real people, but it doesn't tell you which is which. It doesn't show you a kill cam afterwards. It's more of it's their attempt at a super casual online experience where you're not leveling up, you're not whatever, but you get in, you feel cool, you get to get some kills because the bots probably aren't that good, but you don't know which ones are bots and which one are real. And then afterwards, it just tells you your kills, not your deaths. So you're like, dude, I killed 16 people. And little do you know, you died 42. So I think for me, this will be the mode that a month from now, if I'm like, hey, I want to play a fast-paced, cool multiplayer thing, I can jump into that and have fun and play and not worry about, oh, everybody knows the map better than me. I'm going to try to see if I can find the name. Someone in the
chat. Well, I'm sure that we'll be talking more about this in the coming weeks, too, as you play more of it. So we'll definitely check back in next week. I want to get to some calls. We've got a lot of people on the line. We have specifically somebody from the 432 area code. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Hey guys, my name is P.E. from Texas, and my buddies and I have actually been playing Destiny, and I know that y'all talked it to death a couple of weeks back, but I want to bring up a couple of quick points that has really made it a unique play experience for me and my friends. Most of us have full-time jobs, and a lot of us actually go to school at night too, so our play time is really precious. And Destiny, for all of its grindiness at the later levels, the grind to the level cap is actually a pretty smooth curve, and we can do, you know, like an hour of playtime, have a really good time playing together, and actually feel like we accomplished something. So we've really enjoyed actually kind of playing that over the last couple month or so, and really had a good time with it. So
yeah, I think that is a very valid take on that game, and that this is why I love games like that. I love MMOs. I love multiplayer centric experiences. It's why I'm playing Diablo 3 again now. It's why I love Heroes of the Storm. It's because my group of friends and I can hop on. We can have this wonderfully cooperative, fun experience where we're all working as a team, and the individual play sessions can be not necessarily bite-sized, although with Heroes of the Storm, it is bite-sized. It can be 20 minutes or less. But for, you know, these longer couple of hours in an evening, it's not bite-sized, but it's wonderfully concise. It's wonderfully self-contained. It's its own experience that has a beginning, middle, and end. And you can do a greater rift, or you can, you know, run in and do one of these Destiny raids and have that beginning, middle, and end experience with your friends. So I totally get it, and I wouldn't begrudge anybody that fun. For me, there are just games that do that experience better for what I enjoy, and that's why I haven't. I still have Destiny. I'm still waiting for more content to come, and I anticipate returning to it. I'm just finding that kind of really valuable experience that you describe in other games right now.
I really enjoy Destiny, and for that exact same reason as the caller. So I had a bunch of friends that were all very time poor, and it was just a great game that we could jump in, enjoy, really have a great experience on our PS4s, and we're still sort of playing it on and off now. So, yeah, I'm really happy with it.
Cool. Let's go to another call. We got somebody from 607 on the line. What is your name, where are you calling from, and what's on your playlist?
Hey guys, this is Jeff from Rochester, New York, and I was playing the Evolve Big Alpha for a good portion of the weekend. Let me just preface this by saying that, you know, I know probably 5% of the alpha was just kind of showing off gameplay, and 95% of it was them testing their back-end servers, so I'm sure things will change once the game's released. But come out of it, I kind of have mixed feelings, because at the end of every match, the story of your gameplay is kind of the same. You know, if you're a hunter, you're just chasing down the monster, you find him, deploy the mobile arena, and just keep shooting him. If you're the monster, you're just running away from the hunters, eating a few things, and then you keep getting shot by the hunters. There's really no back and forth to the combat that much, but it might just be because, you know, not a lot of people have learned the nuances to the combat or the different characters, and sounds like they're going to be releasing new characters upon release in February, but yeah, we'll have to see how that game turns out in a couple months.
Now, is that different than any other first-person multiplayer experience? I mean, I think you could probably reduce the experience of playing Titanfall or Call of Duty or Destiny down to a couple of sentences that way. You know, it always works the same way as well. Do you find it to be demonstrably different than those kinds of experiences?
A little bit, because there's very few ways in which you can recover. So, like, if your medic gets killed very quickly by the monster, you're pretty much done, and, you know, there's really no way to come back from that. Where in Titanfall, you know, if your Titan gets destroyed or whatever, you know, there's some way you can hide back in the corners and hide out until it's ready to come back for a minute, but, you know, there's really, you know, one mistake in Evolve seems to really screw up everything for your party.
That's interesting. I've played that game a lot at events, and Christian and I tried to get in on the alpha. It just didn't really happen for us this weekend, but I can certainly see those criticisms. I don't think I think there'll be plenty of people that really enjoy the game. I had fun in short bursts with it, but I think if you are experiencing that now and your hope is that the different characters are going to change that, I think that you are going to be sadly mistaken with that, because as much as those characters are different and unique, they really are very much just different ways to do the same thing in each class. So it's going to be, you know, four or five different medics, four or five different damage dealing types, you know, and really they have slight variations, but their roles don't change. You still are doing the same types of things. And yes, they have, you know, big special abilities that are different. So if you're playing the robot engineer type, you can scout the arena in a different way, but you're still kind of doing the same function. You're still functioning in your team in the same way. So, I don't know. It's interesting. At least the alpha gave you a preview into what to expect. But I think people are going to really dig that game. I certainly had fun with it in my play tests with it at various events. But and it might give you the experience, or give one the experience that we heard from the first caller, which is that short, fun kind of get together with your friends and all kind of rotate through who gets to play as the monster. So that could be fun too.
Really quick, combat readiness program is the mode in Advanced Warfare that has bots, and it's kind of like training wheels. I could not for the life of me remember the name of it. Combat readiness program. It's perfect for idiots like me.
Christian has been working on that for the last 20 minutes. Okay, we'll take one more call and then wrap this up. We got somebody on from 661. Where are you calling from? What's your name and what's on your playlist?
Hey guys, this is Michael from Amsterdam. This week I've actually been playing Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2 back to back since I got the first print edition here in Europe. A lot of people probably already said it, because you can see the review scores on Bayonetta 2 that it's really good. But they also say that basically more of the same. Which is true, I think, but after playing Bayonetta 1 first, and then playing Bayonetta 2 right after that, I feel that Bayonetta 2 is the better of the two games, and quite honestly, one of my contenders of Game of the Year.
Well, that's very high praise, and I've heard a lot of people talking about Bayonetta 2. Christian, are you itching to play that? It seems like a game you would dig.
I'm sure I'm going to love the action. Bayonetta 1, I loved the action. The story of the world didn't draw me in the way that it did for some people. I know it's like over the top and whatever. For me, that game didn't speak to me, but the combat is so good, and I'm excited to play it. I don't currently own a Wii U, but as soon as next time I see you, I will steal yours.
Yeah.
But I hear it's awesome, and I hope people are loving it. I love those types of action games, and it's definitely on my list too. I will play that game eventually.
What about you, Raj? Are you into the Bayonetta?
I don't own a Nintendo console, so I didn't play the first one much other than around the trap cyber thing. And they had Bayonetta 2 at PAX Oz, so there was a little bit of a line, but it was in this weird sort of, it was like a cubicle restroom or something behind a curtain. It was a tiny, tiny little booth that people were lining up to play. So I didn't want to get into that hot box. So
it's like the peep show. You have to put in a quarter and come back and play Bayonetta.
It totally was. it was this little curtain with a couple of people. I had no idea what the line was for the first day. So, I enjoyed the parts of the first one that I played, and like the caller said, it seems like a bit more of the same. And I'm not going to rush out and grab it, because I'm not going to rush out and grab a Wii U.
I do want to mention the fact that I'm still playing Legend of Grimrock 2. I think it's fantastic. Refer to last week. If you missed last week's episode, I went on and on about how much I dig it. Still digging it. It's very hard. It's a challenging game, but in a really wonderfully fair way, I guess you could say. I'm also playing Lords of the Fallen. Now, people who listen to the show will know that I got very late to the party into Dark Souls, and really found the joy. In fact, I wrote a piece for the Gamers with Jobs magazine, if anybody is a reader of that. I wrote a piece, the last magazine, on how I came to Dark Souls, really long, lengthy piece that I'm pretty proud of. If you want to refer to that, go to gamerswithjobs.com and find a way to look at their magazine. But Lords of the Fallen is a wannabe. It really is a wannabe Dark Souls, and it's very pretty. I mean, this is what you want Dark Souls to look like. This is the next gen version of Dark Souls, pre Blood Rain, of course. It's very pretty. It pops. I'm playing it on PS4. Unfortunately, it also makes me appreciate Dark Souls all the much more, because you realize the level of polish that those games have. And while I'm not terribly far into Lords of the Fallen, I can already tell that it just doesn't have that, where all the elements come together and you feel like the difficulty is harsh but fair, is tuned just correctly so that I can have different builds of my character and they all work right. It just doesn't create the same kind of level of respect that you have for that game. Which is required when you have a game that's built in the way it requires the patience and requires the level of commitment that you have with these types of experiences. And I hope that, you know, as I play more of it, it will reveal itself to be more of that. But it's certainly the first impression is not that great. It just it feels like the redheaded stepchild of the Dark Souls kind of universe. It just doesn't feel like it's up to snuff.
And I should say quickly, I played Lord of Fallen yes. on your PS4 also.
Yeah, we tried share play. You want to tell them how that went, Christian?
Well, we tried to play Lego Marvel from me on my PS4, and we'd each have a quote-unquote controller, and that did not work. But I took over your controller to play Lord of Fallen on your PS4, and that worked. It seemed to work fine. I don't know how often I will use it. I guess if I got Call of Duty on PS4, it would be cool to let you see a little bit of it. Maybe that's a really neat way to use it. It works. Ended up working for us. The menu, it's a little weird to get into. It's like push share, then push this. Like, in this day and age, we want everything to be instant. But it's like, push this, and then have Jeff accept, and then Jeff accepts, and now give him a controller, and which controller, and, it, you know, it's a little cumbersome, but hey, man, it's cool, right? It's the first step and awesome, and I like that.
All right, well, we got to wrap this up because we have a very special tabletop time coming up very soon with a special guest. I got Richard Hamm, who is Rotto from Rotto Runs Through. He's going to be telling us all about Essen. It's a really cool interview that I already conducted early this morning with him. I'm really very excited for you guys to hear it. His enthusiasm and passion for board games really shines through, and he's got some really great picks of the games that we're going to be getting in the next year that were released at Essen. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, I do want to thank Raj Diut for being here. Thanks, Raj. I woke up early in Australia time and got on with us. I really appreciate it, man.
No, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to be on. Thanks for inviting me. If you want to see more about my PAX stuff, you can see a write-up over at reckoner.com.au, R-E-C-K-O-N-E-R.
Very, very cool. Christian, what about you? What do you got going on?
So November 14th is my birthday, and the 13th I'm doing improv versus stand-up is at UCB if you're in LA. I'm so stoked. I'll be doing a set on it along with Michael Costa, who you might know from his Comedy Central special or The Tonight Show, and then two of my favorite improvisers in the entire world. They play as Heather and Miles. It's Heather Ann Campbell, who wrote for Saturday Night Live. She's on Who's Line, and Miles Stroth, who trained under Del Close, which if you know improv, he's awesome. They're amazing. They are the UCB record holders for a cage match. They're phenomenal. They did our very first ever improv versus stand-up, and they're back doing my birthday show. It's November 13th in Los Angeles. If you're around, I'd love to see you.
Cool beans. And I am, of course, still cranking away on the Slash Filmcast over at slashfilm.com. We're doing Interstellar, and we just did... What did we just do? Another movie. We're doing Nightcrawler. Yeah, we're recording that tomorrow night, I think. So check out those. And we have confirms. My Freudian slip is showing. We have concerns at wehaveconcerns.com is the comedy show I urge you to check out. We did a fun Halloween episode, and we got more coming next week. So we're going to turn it over to me right now. But first, let's leave the people with a parting gift. Raj, do you have a quick parting gift for the people?
Yeah, sure. My parting gift is an Australian author called Max Barry. He had a couple of big hits a while ago in Syrup and Jennifer Government, you may have heard of. But his latest one, Lexicon, is a really, really good read. All about the root of words and sounds and the primal meaning in a sort of action thriller-esque novel. Really, really good read. Really great author. Used to work at Hewlett-Packard, I believe, and gave it all up to go out and write, and he's done really well for himself. And from Melbourne originally, I believe. So if you haven't heard of Max Barry, check him out.
Cool. Christian, you got one?
Daredevil End of Days. Brian Michael Bendis. It's old. It's phenomenal.
Agreed.
I was moving and found my hard copy. It's technically canon now only because everybody loved the story so much, but it's how Daredevil dies, and it's awesome. Read it.
Agreed. I want to say, if you're in North America, if you're in America, I should say, it's tomorrow is time to vote. And seriously, vote. I know it's annoying. I know it's so boring. Both political parties are so, everybody, what's the point? Yeah. You know what? Vote. Seriously. Stop being a dumbass and vote. Get off your butt and vote. It takes no amount of time. It's so easy. And it matters. Give an S and vote. I can't.
And you can play Smash. You can play Smash on your 3DS while you wait.
Yeah, and just really, there's probably not going to be much waiting. If you're over 18, this is something that matters. And you can have a voice. And you don't want old people deciding the world for you. Decide your own world. Vote. I'm not even talking about the people, although the people are important to vote for, but it's initiatives, it's propositions. Those things shape your world very much your reality around you in your local area. It is so important. So have your voice heard. It's not dumb. It's only dumb if you don't do it. Vote. All right. So now I'm pitching over to me because guess what, guys? Very long episode here, but it is tabletop time. All right, it is indeed tabletop time, and I'm really thrilled because I've got a fantastic guest, a guy I've wanted to have on the show for quite a while now, Richard Hamm. You may know him as Rotto from Rotto Runs Through, a fantastic series of internet videos detailing and running through, really giving you the experience of playing a whole bunch of board games. I'm particularly excited to have Richard on because he was just at the Essen Spiel, which is, by all accounts, the largest board gaming convention on the planet. I'm very jealous. I've been enjoying his videos about the convention, so I'm excited to talk to him about that. Richard, thank you for coming, and I appreciate you being here.
Happy to be here. You're making me blush.
No, I mean it. I think your show is fantastic. I particularly like how you focus on games that you like. These are very much games for you and your wife. You're very explicit about that. You're only interested in games that can be played with two players. And you have very specific, very well-detailed likes and dislikes. And I applaud that. You don't have to be all things to all people. You can be very specific. And I think that your show has value in that way.
Yeah, to heck with those other people. It's all about me. I know what you're talking about. Actually, that's something I'm always surprised by whenever I do go to a convention like Gen Con or Essen, which, you know, are basically like the E3s of the board game industry. I, you know, so many people come up to me and they are in the same situation. They are just, you know, a happy couple who love playing games together. And, you know, they really respond to my show because I speak to and focus on that. I cover games for people who don't want to beat the crap out of each other, right, who actually just want to share a really good time and, you know, have some fun at the table.
Yeah, and I think you and your wife both value themes in games that aren't necessarily violent or confrontational. I think that's cool, too. I think those kind of games have their place for sure, and I enjoy them at times. But I love the emphasis on that kind of gaming.
Well, then keep on listening. That's all I'm going to cover.
For real. I also enjoy the fact that you do come from the video game industry. You referenced E3. You are now a retired, I understand, a video game designer, right?
Yes, I am a recovered former video game designer. I was in the industry for about 20 years. Probably people might know me best from Fable 2 or the original Siphon Filter series on, you know, the original PlayStation, you know, and a few things here and there through the years. But yeah, for the last 2 years, I've been out of the game, and, you know, coincidentally, I've really over those last 2 years switched over from, well, my lifelong love and obsession with board games, and that has all that attention and love and passion has switched from digital to cardboard. And a big part of that is coming back to the other thing. It's because it's something I can share with my wife. For years, we always tried to find video games we could play together. Pixel Junk Shooter, you know, Lego Star Wars, all those kinds of games. But it just seemed to be getting harder and harder and harder to find experiences we could share that she would enjoy, because she had no particular desire to run around in a first-person shooterscape and kill stuff alongside me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was only back, it's just like 5 or 6 years ago, but I think it was in 2009, that we discovered that board games are more than Monopoly, Magic the Gathering, and Warhammer 40K, that there was this whole other universe of games out there. And when we discovered we could have much deeper and more meaningful, entertaining experiences shared, you know, across the table, looking each other in the eye instead of both of us staring at a TV while we sit on a couch. I mean, it's been really, really hard to go back.
Yeah, that's the thing I keep proselytizing about myself. So I'm curious, what was that gateway game? What was the game that made you realize that there was this whole other world out there?
Oh, well, that would have to be Pandemic, which was a brilliant game. You know, it's funny.
The reason it happened is Jen and I, we were going to make a road trip. We had a 2-week road trip through France because, you know, I'm an American, but I've lived in Europe for the last decade. And I realized, crap, for 2 weeks, we're going to be on the road. We're not necessarily going to have power. We're not necessarily going to have internet. What the heck are we going to do? And so I was on this trip in Seattle. I was at PAX, actually. And I figured, well, you know what? I know what we can do. I'll buy a copy of Travel Scrabble, because I remembered as a kid when my family, my parents and me and my brother, we did road trips. We would play that on the road, and I thought that'd be perfect. I'll go buy a copy of that. And I went to a really great store in Seattle called Blue Moon Gaming, and I was just going in there to look for it. It's totally random. I could have gone to Walmart to buy this thing, but instead I went to a proper game store, and I told the guy what I wanted. He said, no, what do you want that for? And he talked to me about, what do Jen and I like, not just in terms of games, but what do we like in general? And after we'll talk about a lot of stuff, and I revealed Jen's hardcore love of viral apocalyptic fiction. Don't ask me why, but that's a real niche she's into. She's loved The Last Stand ever since college. And he recommended Pandemic. And for those 2 weeks, we had a great time. We were out seeing the sights every day, but we could not wait to get back in the evening to our camper van because we instantly got hooked. The best thing about that experience was, hovering with just a dim fluorescent light, working together every night cooperatively, trying to save the world from pandemic outbreaks. And it was just so eye-opening to us. Those experiences were so much more deep and meaningful and personal than anything we'd ever experienced before. And so, yeah, I'm like I said, proselytization, please continue, because I still think the vast majority of folks out there just don't know this huge industry of incredible entertainment experiences that just fly under the radar because we've all been programmed since we were 4 years old to think board games means Twister, Operation, and Monopoly.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I love the passion in your voice. It's exactly how I feel as well. And you just want to reveal this world to people. And and you definitely were at the center of that world last week for the Essen Spiel. And I've heard accounts that there were over 800 new games released there. I mean, that makes E3 look like a tiny little flea market in comparison. This is a massive, massive event.
Definitely.
Yeah. What I've been enjoying your videos. I particularly like the walking around the press room video. That felt like it felt like somebody that got to spend the night inside the toy store and nobody was around. You could just run around. What were the biggest games in your mind that you got to see there, got to play and got to take home?
Well, I'm still trying to work my way through them. I walked home with about 60 games in my back pocket or in my luggage, more to the point. And, I barely scratched the surface, but right now I think probably the coolest single game coming out of Essen, and I'm not even going to say the coolest, I'm going to say maybe the most important game because of what it means for the evolution of board gaming as a whole, is a game from a Czech Games Edition called Alchemists.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've seen, I already have done a run through for it. I went in being super excited about it, and it has not disappointed me at all. Because what makes this game so special is, it provides everything that we want out of, a board game experience. Something that Jen and I, we can sit down at the table together. It's all about us interacting with each other, not trying to kill each other. It's all about us. We're competing. We're competitors. There's only one winner that comes out of it. But it's all about us doing the best we can at what we've set out to do. And, just trying to stay ahead of the competition as opposed to trying to tear down the competition.
Mm-hmm.
In this game, we are, junior budding alchemists straight out of Alchemy Academy, in some kind of fantasy universe. And we spend all our time, going out foraging in the morning and, getting, toadstools and bird claws and all kinds of stuff. And we spend the majority of our day, every round of this game, doing experiments, taking all these reagents, these components, experimenting, mixing them together to create potions. And what we do is we don't know what we're going to get when we mix these things together. And to find out, we either have to get some, you know, intern student from the local, you know, community college, the Alchemy Community College, to drink it and so we can experiment on them. Or it's hilarious. Or we can experiment on ourselves. And, you know, hey, maybe we'll discover a speed potion, or maybe we'll discover paralysis. You never really know. And so it's a fun, solid game. It's got a really great sense of humor. There's a lot of really evocative stuff in it. But what's so cool about this game is when you sit down at the table to play together, you also have to bring your iPhone or your Android or your iPad or a laptop, because there's a digital component. When I have the card that says I want to mix a warty toad with a toadstool mushroom, I put these cards, you know, on a little pedestal that's on my little like secret hidden screen. I point the phone's camera at it. It actually digitally recognizes what cards I'm telling it I'm mixing, and it will give me the feedback and tell me what I've created. And the brilliant thing about this is, if it wasn't for the phone doing all this stuff, you know, keeping track of what equals what and all that stuff, the game would not be possible. It creates an experience that it's actually amazing to play. This game kind of like puts you in the shoes of a scientist. You really feel like I am creating experiments. Every time I mix two things together, I discover a little bit more about the chemical composition of these things. I don't know the whole story, but I know a little bit more. And the more experiments I do, the more I learn. But the brilliant thing is, because I don't have to declare publicly what I'm mixing, that I'm mixing, a pixie dust with whatever, because all I have to do is tell the phone. So nobody else at the table is privy to my research. And this, you know, this kind of privacy that I can discover stuff, and I'm watching Jen and I can see, oh, wow, she just discovered how to make poison or something like that. But what did she do? I remember in the morning she went out hunting and she collected three toads. Does that mean toads are the secret ingredient to create poison? You know, I mean, all of that stuff would not be possible without the fact that we're using a phone. So it creates, you know, it feels like a very modern, new, exciting experience, because, you know, there's multimedia. There, you know, there's sounds, there's animations. You know, the game comes to life. It's not something that's static and sits there unmoving on the table. You know, the game speaks to us. Hmm. But it hasn't turned into a video game, because all of our attention, all of our focus is still looking each other in the eye, trying to figure out what the other person is doing. So it's a brilliant, I think, first step towards one potential evolution of board games, bringing in digital that can do stuff that was impossible 5 years ago. And I mean, sorry, I've just gone on a little bit long there, but as you
know,
I
love it.
It's very cool.
Yeah, no, it was the number one game that I was looking forward to seeing more about from Essen as well, and it just looks spectacular. I mean, you talk about it being a really top tier board game, just component wise, and the stuff that's on the table looks fantastic. And I love games where you're creating something, and the deduction side is really fascinating. And then, as you said, the integration of this app. You know, we saw sort of the talk of Gen Con this year was the XCOM board game, which is going to have its own app functionality. I think this is really the new wave of finding this interesting middle ground between purely analog and purely digital, that there's this marriage where one can complement the other, and it doesn't, and it's kind of a new third thing, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, I know a lot of people in the board game community are, you know, they really kind of look down on this, you know, like, you know, what is this going to do? Is this going to translate to a future where whenever you sit down at a table to play a board game, everybody spends the entire game looking at their individual phones and that human connection is lost?
Right.
But I don't think that's going to be the case. I mean, to me, the fact that Alchemist puts my phone as another component in the game is no different than if the designer of Alchemist wanted to include dice. You know, digital components are just going to become another tool in the designer's toolbox, and sometimes it'll really benefit a game to be able to, like, you know, store secret hidden information across networked phones in a way that would be impossible. But sometimes a lot of games aren't going to need that, and you know they're going to continue with the, down the traditional road. I am just so stoked. I mean, it is a bright and shining future, and it just shows one of many different ways that board games, you know, have to evolve. You know, in a time where video games have really kind of established what they can do, and now you see lots of indie developers kind of branching out and kind of almost reimagining what does it mean to be a 2D side scroller. I mean, it doesn't change anything about the raw mechanics of hitting your jump button and all that stuff, but you know, you come up with really interesting far out stuff. You know, I see this as the same sort of thing in board games, that there's just as much exciting, innovative, new undiscovered country, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I agree. I'm really excited about it too. My only worry is that, you know, part of the charm that I have with board games is that I can pull out a 30-year-old copy of Acquire and put it on the table, and it's the exact same game, and it plays exactly the same, and we have that experience, and board games are sort of timeless in that way. If the mechanics are sound, it'll always work. And the worry, I guess, with these types of experiences is that, you know, did they update the app for the phone 10 years from now, and is it still going to work, and is the game now unplayable 10 years? And I guess those are, you know, preemptively a little silly concerns, but that is part of the joy of board gaming for me.
Yeah, I understand that. But, you know, I mean, my counter to that is Windows 3.1 came with an executable called Cardfile, cardfile.exe. This is a program that must be 15, almost 20 years old now. My wife still to this day uses cardfile.exe to keep track of all our important, you know, all our account numbers and, you know, passwords and all that stuff. She's kind of grimacing at me right now. How dare I tell people this? I mean, it's networked, it's offline, nobody knows, but it's an example of a program that has been in existence for 20 years. And Jen, even though she's running Windows 8.1 on her laptop now, can still keep track of this data. I think we are moving forward into a future where data is never lost. I mean, you know, it's, you know, the equivalent of once some celebrities, you know, nudie pics end up on the online, they always say, well, you know what? Once that's up, it's never going away. You'll always be able to find that. And I think that goes beyond, you know, nip slip shots. It's true for all data. And I don't see any particular reason that if my wife can still run an application from 20 years ago, that we should not be able to run an application that came out today, 20 years from now.
Interesting. Yeah, I think you're probably right. I'd love to talk more about your experience at Essen. I know this isn't the first time you've been. You've been over and over, but you're also a guy who's been to E3 and other conventions. How does it compare to Gen Con and E3? Is it as massive as it seems from the outside looking in?
Oh, it is gigantic. I mean, I don't know if all your listeners know, board gaming in Europe, particularly in certain countries like Germany and Greece, actually, is so far integrated into public pop culture. I mean, you have, you know, national newspapers that have, you know, weekly review columns devoted to talking about all the new board games that came out that week, you know, in addition to all the new movies and whatnot. And so, you know, it's not surprising that you would have such a huge, effectively, toy fair to service this gigantic European community. I mean, Gen Con and BGG Con and the PAXes, all these conferences that are in America are great. And, you know, and they bring all the geeks together in one place. That's awesome. But board gaming in Europe has gone beyond the geek. Yeah. Regular people play designer board games. And, it's massive. The biggest difference between what I've seen from, you know, those other shows you're mentioning and Essen is, you know, particularly on Saturday and Sunday, 50%, 60-70% of the people you see are families who have brought their kids.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, as a group, they're excited because this is something that's just part of, you know, their societal culture. They grow up sharing these cool, wonderful games that the vast majority of gamers in America have never heard of. And so I think that's what probably makes it has gives a really different feel. the, you know, it's, but that's a reflection of, you know, kind of a European versus American societal standard, really. Yeah. I mean, and I don't mean to downplay, I mean, if there's one thing that's, I would say, is weaker about the Essen experience as opposed to, well, pretty much any other show I've been to, you know, whether it's Gamescom or, you know, E3 or anything, is Essen is at its heart. You don't go there to play games. You go there to buy games. If you're lucky, you might find a little, you know, 1x1 meter patch of empty floor space that you could actually bust the game out you just bought and play it. But for the most part, it's about the ravenous consumption of all the new hotness that just came out. And then you take it home and play it.
Interesting.
You compare that to pretty much any other show, which is all about bending over backwards to make sure people can play it.
Right.
Although, you know, I've never thought about this now. I think that, again, might be a reflection of the different cultural norms. In Europe, nobody has to be convinced that playing a board game is cool. They're there just to get the game. You know, at in America, it's all about trying to convince people to, you know, even try out your game. So, that's kind of, I think, in a nutshell, what really makes it feel different. Also, it is chock-a-block. I mean, it gets so ridiculously crowded. I've been to over a dozen E3s over the course of my career. I've never seen an E3 anywhere near as physically crowded as what happens in Essen. It's like being on subway trains in India or Japan. You know, people just bunched together. So, because it's such this huge writhing mass of humanity, all come here for a common gaming goal. It's unlike anything else you've ever seen. It's amazing.
So we've got The Alchemist, which I'm excited about. Can you hit me? I urge everybody listening to check out your YouTube channel, or you can just go to rahdo.com, right? RAHDO.com. Yeah. That'll get you right to it. And you're running through a whole bunch of games that you got at the convention. But what are a couple of other picks that you can tease right now of stuff we should be looking out for?
Slowly but surely. Well, let's see. What else has really tickled my fancy? Another big game I'm super stoked about, and actually this came out at Gen Con, but you know, it was also available at Essen as well, is Shadowrun Crossfire.
Right.
And you know, I think this one might have actually some interest to some of you, because you know, Shadowrun, that's a pretty well loved franchise. There's been, you know, remember the excellent Xbox first person shooter that came out what, 7 or 8 years ago? The original Shadowrun's been around forever. And so they put out a card game this year. It's a cooperative card game, completely cooperative, where you and I are both Shadowrunners, you know, runners going on jobs together, you know, trying to take down the evil corporation and get out alive. But what's interesting to me about this game is, well, first of all, one thing, just so you know, that game is probably the hardest, nastiest, roughest game. It will chew you up and spit you out. It shows you no mercy. It's a very, very tough game to beat. So when you do win, it's very satisfying. But what's really interesting about the game, whether you win or lose, every time you go on a run, and you know, Jen and I, we played this game easily a dozen times now, and we just keep wanting to go back. Every time you go on a run, you earn experience points, or what are called karma points. And those are permanent. Over multiple plays of Shadowrun, over weeks and months, we continue to build up and evolve characters who grow with us. And in this way, it's a board card game that has elements of what you would expect in an MMO. You know, people who play MMO, you know, who play World of Warcraft for years and could not imagine ever walking away from, you know, their dark elf mage or whatever it might be, because they put so much love, sweat, and tears into it. That is something that's being replicated. It's another new, again, undiscovered country for board games, this idea of permanence, that when you put the game back in the box and you put it up on your shelf, the game has changed. And when you play it again in the future, you can pick up where you left off. I am so excited about that. It makes it tough for me to actually, hey, you know what? What do we want to play tonight? I've got 300 games I'm looking at here on the wall. Let's just play Shadowrun, because why would I want to play anything else when I could keep on building my character in that game?
Right.
So that's a big, big deal. And I think, you know, as big a deal as digital is, I think the notion of permanence, you know, the notion that if you, however much you put into the game, that game will give back to you and will grow with you. I think that's something that you're going to see starting to get integrated into the design of a lot more games. Yeah. Plus, it's just a really, really cool, setting, the whole, cyberpunk meets high fantasy environment, Blade Runner meets Dungeons and Dragons kind of thing. It's just a very, very cool product. I think, spoiler alert, for people who are waiting for my top 10 of the year, it might make number one.
Oh, wow.
Because we love it so much. And equally, it signals such a huge milestone in the evolution of board and card game design.
Wow, very, very cool. I'm just looking at it here on Board Game Geek, and I guess Mike Elliott had his hand in it, who's the designer of Marvel Dice Masters as well, which is a game I've been loving a lot lately.
That is
It looks fantastic. I this was not on my radar, so I'm excited to hear about Shadowrun Crossfire, which looks like it's even available, so you can purchase it, which is different than a lot of these games. A lot of the games you hear about from Essen, you won't even be able to buy for a year or more if you're just a regular North American resident.
Yep.
Any other picks before we kind of wrap this up?
Let me think. What else really jumps out at me? I'm literally just I should pull up a list or something. But actually, I'm just looking at my wall, to be honest, right now.
That makes me envious right there. You're just looking at your wall to see what the cool stuff from Essen was. That's awesome.
You know what? Okay, I'll mention another one. Assault at Doomrock.
Ooh.
This is a very, very straightforward high fantasy game. It's another cooperative. You may notice this theme with me and Jen. We're always looking for games together instead of being each. But, the thing about Doomrock, and it's, I mentioned this whole explosion in video games that are going on right now. You're seeing great, crazy, exciting new ideas, made by very, very small teams, that are, just getting their funding on Kickstarter and whatnot. You're seeing that in the board game world too. Assault on Doomrock was a crowdfunded game, not on Kickstarter, but on Indiegogo. And, it was designed by one guy in Poland who had a dream, found an artist who made some really great art and came up with cooperative fantasy dungeon crawl adventure games. It's a fairly commonly made subject matter. It's pretty well tread. There's a lot of really big hitters, the Descents out there in that play space. Mm-hmm. But he ended up creating a game that really rewrites the rules of how you do a fantasy adventure dungeon crawl game, the way combat works, the way exploration works, the way character creation works. It introduces a lot of humor and comedy. It creates these really interesting decisions that you, along with other players, make together. But the thing is, it didn't come from Fantasy Flight or Wizards of the Coast, the board game equivalents of Electronic Arts or Activision.
Right.
It came from just this guy who had a dream. And I think that's another thing that's so cool about board games as a whole, because it's still a much, much smaller, compact, it's almost a cozy industry. If you want to have conversations online with the developers of your favorite board game, it's easy to do because they're just geeks like you. And so when I played Assault at Doomrock, and I saw that, this does not follow the regular formula. It completely throws the formula and creates something entirely new, but at the same time is very familiar and very comfortable, because I love high fantasy. I love Tolkien-inspired, destroying orcs and, hunting down dragons. But it does it in such a new, different way, and I don't know if a game like that would have come out of The Machine, where, everybody wants to make the next Descent. This was a very personal game that does things in a very different way. And so I think it's representative of something that's special about board games too.
Very cool.
What happened to cross my eye when I looked around.
So again, that's Assault on Doomrock. People should keep their eye out for that. Sounds
And that's
amazing.
One of those ones, like you were saying, that's one of the ones, like you're saying, that people aren't going to be able to get. Sorry.
Yeah.
I think right now you could only get it in Europe, but I think it's a cool game. I am sure it will eventually make its way across the pond if it hasn't already.
Well, this has been a real treat for me, Richard. Thank you so much for taking the time out to be on the show. I could listen to you talk about board games forever, and which is why I love your YouTube channel so much. So tell people how to find you and what they should keep an eye out for.
Well, I'm easy to find. Just go to www.rahdo.com. That's RAHDO.com. I try to put out about 3 or 4 videos a week. Another thing you can do is go to my guild, which is http://guild.rahdo.com, which is a pretty active discussion forum where I interact regularly with all the folks who watch my show. I run monthly a voting service that lets my fans vote for the games they want me to cover. I try to be really, really interactive. Any person who asks me a question anywhere, whether it's on YouTube or on Twitter or on Facebook, on BoardGameGeek, if I see it, I will answer them. So, you know, if you want to learn more, just come over to guild.rahdo.com and join in on the conversation.
Very cool. Thanks again for being here. As I said, I'm a fan, and I appreciate all the great videos you put out and all the coverage that makes me salivate for the newest, latest, best board games. Oh, man, I'm so excited for this year. It's going to be a good one. So thanks a lot for being here.
Yeah, great. It was a lot of fun.
All right. That'll do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks to Zach Holder for producing the show. I really appreciate him letting us do it a little out of order this week, but it worked out really great. Thanks to Richard Hamm. Thank you to Raj Diut and Christian Spicer. And until next week, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.